Texas is asking the federal government to help them battle COVID-19. Specifically, the state wants federal resources to support testing centers, medical personnel, and more monoclonal antibody treatments. At the end of December, Texas was reporting more than 10,000 new COVID cases per day, up from 4,000 in November. That state's request comes after President Biden told some of the nation's governors that they're going to have to take the lead on fighting the virus.
Look, there is no federal solution. This gets solved at a state level. I'm looking at Governor Sununu on the board here. He talks about that a lot. And it ultimately gets down to where the rubber meets the road, and that's where the patient is in need of help or preventing the need for help.
Biden also reiterated some of the recent promises he made, including the federal government's purchase of 500 million rapid COVID tests. So we thought we'd take a look at the various ways the federal, state, and local governments can help the pandemic, what they can't do, and the role of the private sector and the rest of us. You could join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of Biden saying that states need to take the lead? The federal government can only provide support. What do you want to see Wisconsin do? What do you want to see the federal government do when it comes to providing testing, support for medical personnel, the treatments that are out there, promoting vaccines, requiring vaccines? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Julie Rovner is the chief Washington correspondent for Kaiser Health News and the host of KHN's What the Health podcast. Julie, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Well, let's talk about some of the division of labor here. First of all, President Biden says the federal government can't do it all. It's done a lot. What do you see as the main role of the federal government in trying to help states deal with this?
Well, the main role of the federal government and its public health service is and has been to provide funding and support and expertise and guidance to state and local public health agencies, which, as the president pointed out in the clip that you played, is kind of where the rubber meets the road when it comes to public health.
There have been big questions about the government and the federal government and how much its role is to provide stuff, whether that was PPE early on or then masks, vaccines. And now testing. How important is it for the federal government to distribute things or coordinate states as they seek out that vital material?
Well, we've had, you know, going back to the beginning of the pandemic, this national stockpile that was generally created for the idea that if there was going to be an emergency, it was going to be on a state or regional basis, and that the federal government would maintain this stockpile of medical supplies and drugs and would be they would be available to be shipped as needed to places that were experiencing a temporary surge and need for those things. There are also people who can help, and obviously we've had the National Guard mobilized in many places, and there are also members of the federal public health service, uniformed public health service, who are available to come and help out. Of course, what we're seeing with the pandemic is that, particularly right now, everybody is having a surge at the same time. So it's difficult for the federal government to surge to, you know, one place. The model is more an outbreak in a particular state or a particular city or a hurricane or wildfires or something that does not affect the entire country at the same time.
The Biden administration has been criticized some for not having testing ready for a surge like this. So how big a problem do you see the availability of rapid testing in particular being right now, Julie?
Well, other countries have been distributing tests basically for free, or they're available, you know, for pickup at libraries or for a dollar or at the grocery store. We have gone through the private sector, and this is partly because not so much the U.S. doesn't have a public health system. We do. It's because we don't have a public health, a public medical system. We don't have public health insurance the way many other countries do. So it's easier for them to sort of integrate their public health system with their sort of what we would consider our private health system. And we had private companies making these tests. And I think there was assumption, obviously wrong, last summer when things started to get better, that, well, why are we making all these tests when we're certainly not going to need them because there aren't that many people that have COVID anymore. That turned out to be an incorrect assumption. Now it takes a while for manufacturers of these tests to ramp back up.
Talking to Julie Rovner, chief Washington correspondent for Kaiser Health News, host there of the What the Health podcast, talking about the division of labor between federal, state, maybe local governments when it comes to all the things involved in trying to deal with this newest COVID surge. You can join in with your questions or your thoughts at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. Julie, states, we've got 50 of them plus some territories, Washington, D.C., in many ways going their own ways. What are you seeing when it comes to the range of state responses right now to this surge?
Yeah, they are. And, you know, it's difficult because we're having a hard time right now differentiating between sort of who has Omicron and who's vaccinated and who might be at less risk for severe disease and who still has Delta, which is still floating around and might need monoclonal antibodies. But it takes a long time to figure that out. And you need to get those drugs on board fairly quickly. Obviously, different states are in different stages of this surge. So it makes sense that states would do things on a state level or even on a local level. But right now, you know, if you look at the maps that various public health agencies are putting out, every state is having a surge. And I think I just saw a map today that said every single county is having a surge.
Let's talk about those monoclonal antibodies. These are treatments. They're pretty effective. I was looking at recommendations, though. You use a different one depending on which stage you are in the illness. Most of them require infusions where you got to get in and have them put them in you. You don't just get a quick shot. Texas saying it's out of one called Sotrovimab. Republican Governor Greg Abbott of Texas says the Biden administration is effectively hoarding these drugs, denying states independent access to these treatments. Do you see log jams in the world of monoclonal antibodies right now? Where are they coming from?
There are, and yet another problem is that it turns out there's three different monoclonal antibodies that are available. We've got this pill that's going to come online, but that's not available yet. It's still being, you know, it was just approved and it needs to be manufactured. So of the three that we had available, two of them don't work on the Omicron variant. So you not only need to test positive, you need to know which variant you have. And that's part of the reason why the federal government has been controlling the distribution of these monoclonal antibodies. But obviously, there is more demand right now than there is supply.
Now, there are also these antiviral treatments out there. Good news, but making things more complicated too. Are these getting to where they need to go?
Well, that's the pill that I was just talking
okay.
about. And they're right. And they are not yet because it's still too soon.
How about states when it comes to things like requiring vaccines or requiring vaccines or testing to do certain things or be in particular workplaces? There's a federal effort on that we'll talk to in a minute. What's the range of responses now at the state level?
Well, the range of responses is wide, and at the local level. There are states where some counties have mask mandates and some don't, and some businesses have vaccine mandates, and in some states, businesses aren't allowed to have vaccine mandates. There's obviously a fight going on at the federal level. The Supreme Court this Friday will hear two cases about the federal vaccine mandates, so we should know in the fairly near future about those. But in the meantime, there's a lot of people who are still not vaccinated, and still walking around potentially vulnerable and potentially still spreading this illness.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Arthur is with us in Madison. Arthur, hi.
Hello.
What did you want to ask about, yeah. Arthur?
Well, my question was, why haven't the government kind of pushed the insurance companies to force vaccinations or have the insurance companies to force vaccinations instead of just having them not really saying anything or not really doing anything right now? Why haven't they, say either get vaccinated or you're not insured?
Arthur, thanks for the call. Julie, insurance companies, either a carrot or a stick, I guess. What's their role been? Could they do something like that?
I don't think insurance companies really want to be put in that position. I mean, there are obviously insurance companies that are health maintenance organizations like Kaiser Permanente, with which, by the way, Kaiser Health News is not affiliated, but they have sort of an interest in keeping you healthy. And they do, they strongly urge things. They make it as easy as possible. Generally, the mandate requirements tend to come from government, not from private entities Although, as we see, some private businesses are requiring it too, but they're just saying if you don't want to, you can only come into our business if you get vaccinated, not like the insurance company that says, if you don't get vaccinated, we're not going to cover you.
Arthur, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. We'll go now to Brett in Elroy. Brett, hi.
Hey, I just wondered if you could touch on if we're seeing Omicron versus Delta in the hospitalizations right now. Early reports were stating that Omicron was more of upper respiratory, whereas Delta probably attacked deeper lung tissue. And if that makes a difference with the availability of monoclonal antibodies and why we're not seeing the antibodies distributed like we should.
Brett, thanks for the call. A lot of big questions, Julie, about Omicron versus Delta. What do we know so far about what Brett was asking about?
Well, there's so much that we don't know, but, you know, one of the big things, first of all, we don't even know the case numbers that we have right now. We don't know how accurate those are, because now many people who can get these at-home tests are taking them. And if you test positive on an at-home test, unless you're going to call your doctor, there's no requirement that be reported. So there's probably many more positive tests and probably mild cases than we're seeing in those numbers. It is very hard to do the genetic work that it takes to differentiate one strain from another. Hospitals pretty much around the country are slammed right now. So it's hard to know whether you have Delta or Omicron. Although I did today see that the CDC said that in the cases that they have been sequencing, Omicron is now 95% of the new cases.
Thanks a lot for that call. We're talking about the various ways federal and state governments are fighting COVID-19. Julie Rovner is with us, chief Washington correspondent at Kaiser Health News, host there of the What the Health podcast. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What's your reaction to President Biden saying, hey, it's mostly up to states to end the pandemic, though we, the federal government, are going to support your efforts? What kind of policies are you seeing at your local and county levels? Do you have a mask mandate in your community of any sort? Do you wish you did? Do you wish you didn't? What role should local governments, state governments be playing here? You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're talking about what federal, state, and local governments are able to do to manage COVID-19. President Biden recently said there's not one federal solution to ending the pandemic. A lot of the work has to happen at the state level. He said the feds would still play a supporting role. Julie Rovner stays with us. She's the chief Washington correspondent for Kaiser Health News. And you could join in with your thoughts or questions at 800-642-1234. What do you want to see from the feds, from the state government, from your local or county government? Call 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Let's go back to your calls now. Judy is with us in Madison. Judy, hi.
Hi.
What did you want to ask about or tell us about, Judy?
Well, I'd just like to ask how she feels about creating temporary tent facilities like they did when the pandemic initially broke out, and hospitals were inundated with patients, so they created these alternative facilities. What does she feel about creating those for people who choose not to be vaccinated and are basically taking up all the space in the hospitals? And so people that have legitimate health concerns, that need heart surgery, need any other kind of medical treatment that requires hospitalization, would have a bed and they could be treated rather than sitting off and waiting until a bed opens up.
Judy, thanks for the call. Julie, the idea of field hospitals for COVID to relieve some of the pressure on hospitals, Judy suggesting mainly for the unvaccinated. What do you think?
Well, I don't know that they would be able to differentiate
right.
If somebody's brought in. And also, I mean, part of the problem with that is that if you have generally field hospitals are people who need less type of supportive care, it's pretty hard to have a lot of ventilators in field hospitals, although they did in New York. I mean, they set up a field hospital that they ended up not having to use where they did have ventilators. So it is possible. You know, one would hope it's not going to get to that. But certainly if you set up a field hospital, I don't think you would do it to try to segregate people by whether or not they were vaccinated, but by, you know, where their needs could be best served.
Thanks for that call, Judy. And that raises the issue, Julie, of the federal government helping with personnel, which is one of the big issues in overwhelmed hospitals. We've seen some federal relief coming to places like Green Bay, among others. How much more capacity, though, does the federal government have when it comes to sending medical personnel to help out in overburdened states?
Well, it's trying to. I mean, you know, obviously the National, as I said, the National Guard has been mobilized in many states to help with, you know, it's not just the doctors and the nurses and the medical professionals, but it's also the other people who keep the hospital running who may not be, you know, professionally, you know, medically trained, the people who do the food service and do the cleaning. And, you know, that everybody is exhausted. Everybody is catching COVID. And there is going to be need for help to basically prevent the nation's, you know, healthcare system, our healthcare delivery system, from crumbling under the strain. That's what the big concern has been.
Thanks for that call. We're talking to Julie Rovner with Kaiser Health News, looking at the latest COVID-19 news and the division of labor. What can the federal government do? What can the state and local governments do? You could join in with your thoughts or your questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas at WPR.org. Back to your calls now. Jake is on the line in Madison. Jake, hello.
Hi. I just have a humble opinion, maybe, but I just wanted to state for people out there that when people are refusing to wear masks or refusing to get vaccinated, and they talk about their individual freedoms, that's not what it's about. They're making it about their selfishness and their lack of consideration for the community at large.
Jake, thanks for the call. Julie, before we get into some mask mandates, a related issue, what do you think of Jake's idea, selfishness versus public service? There's been concern that, yeah, we haven't really thought about each other in some ways in our response as individuals to the pandemic.
Well, this has been the debate all along. When does our responsibility to our fellow citizens, you know, override our desire and need for personal freedom? And, you know, I've seen this compared to so many things, although one of the more effective comparisons I saw today was, you know, if a bunch of people are together on a boat and somebody pokes a hole in the bottom of his stateroom floor, and other people might complain, but they're all literally in the same boat. And if the boat sinks, they're all going down. This is a debate. It's hardly new. It's, you know, we've seen a lot of it in this pandemic, but it's hardly new when people's individual rights sort of butt up against the needs of a community at large.
And then with mask mandates, Julie, the statewide mandate's been long gone here in Wisconsin after a court ruling. County mask mandates few and far between here. What is the state of the art when it comes to mandating masks around the country?
Well, and complicating this even more, and it, in most states, it's the same. There are few state mask mandates left because they've been so unpopular. I live in a county where there is a mask mandate, but now what the experts are saying, particularly with Omicron, is because it is so much more contagious that you need a better mask, that actually people should be wearing better than cloth masks or even better than surgical masks. And that's something that that's been very difficult to get through to people. You know, they've had these masks and they've been wearing them and they've been fine up until now because we haven't been dealing with a variant that is this contagious. So it's not just a matter of whether or not to wear a mask, but what kind of mask to wear.
We heard from Matt in Wausau who emails, our dealing with COVID has been the worst in the world. We've been in this 2 years and still don't have enough masks, tests, vaccines, hospital beds, nurses, doctors. Matt says for-profit healthcare is literally killing us. I don't know, Julie, what do you think about that comparison on the world stage of the U.S. performance on COVID?
I've been watching other countries, what they've been doing too, and nobody really seems to have the magic answer to how to do this right. I mean, our public health system is pretty much as public as most other countries' public health systems. Where we differ is that our delivery system is private, and many other countries don't have private delivery systems, although some other countries do. Canada does. It's just I think there's been everybody's exhausted around the world and there's been pushback everywhere. I'm not suggesting for a minute that we've done a great job, but when I look around, we obviously have plenty of company among countries that haven't done a great job either.
Time for one more caller. Michael is with us in Northwest Wisconsin. Michael, hi.
Hi, I am a student at UW-Madison, and obviously Dane County has a mask mandate. And I'm just wondering, with the campus having about 96% student vaccination, I'm just wondering to what extent or what degree masks are important and should be required on campus, you know?
Michael, thanks for the call. I work in a UW-Madison-owned building, and there's a sign, mask required regardless of vaccination status. Julie, in a high vaccine environment, do mask mandates still make sense, Michael wonders?
In an Omicron environment, they do, because we're seeing lots and lots of people who are all who are fully vaccinated and boosted getting COVID. They're not getting severe cases, but they're getting it. And if you get it, you can spread it. So, again, this is you would like to protect yourself if you can. And being vaccinated, you're not necessarily fully protected. And you would like to protect others who might not be vaccinated and might be more vulnerable.
Thanks for the call, Michael. Julie, we've covered a lot of ground, heard from a lot of great questions from listeners. What do you have your eye on now with so much going on?
I think, you know, there's every expectation that this is going to spike up really fast and then perhaps go down really fast. I am most worried about the ability of the healthcare system just to keep running. I'm really worried about these people who've been, you know, working nonstop for 2 years and who are exhausted and just drained, and whether they're going to be able to handle this, and about people who have other health problems. I think one of the callers mentioned this, that, you know, if you have a heart attack, or, you know, we had a snowstorm here in Washington, D.C. this week where we're not really used to it. And, you know, you can fall and slip on the ice and break something and need to go to the hospital that's all full of COVID patients. So that's kind of my biggest concern right now.
Just very briefly, Julie, do you worry about long-term impact on personnel, the doctors, the nurses, and others? Maybe this is going to drive some of them out of the profession?
I do. I mean, I worry about sort of the state of our medical care system going forward. There's a lot of people, young people stepping up who want to get into it, which is a good thing. But I just, you know, while those people are getting trained, I worry about people who are sort of nearing retirement saying, I'm not going to do this anymore. And us having, you know, a really severe shortage of healthcare personnel.
Julie, as always, thanks a lot for joining us today.
My pleasure.
That's Julie Rovner, chief Washington correspondent for Kaiser Health News, host of KHN's What the Health podcast. We talked to her about President Biden saying COVID needs to be solved mostly at the state level and what federal, state, and local governments are doing to help.